This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It's happening, everybody. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. It's a Tuesday, which means coming up at 5 o'clock, El Hombre, extended edition. That's the only upside to the Seahawks being out of this whole thing. You get an extended edition of El Hombre every Tuesday.
Yeah, look forward to talking to Michael Bradley and stationed there in Philadelphia, and he can probably tell us a little bit about Kobe Bryant and his high school years there at Lower Merion.
Yeah,
suburb of Philadelphia.
Yeah, I read that they're going to do a 33-second moment of silence there. That was his number, I believe, 33, if I've got that correct. Yeah, so they're going to do that out there as a way to honor him, and obviously that story continues to reverberate, and people still sharing their feelings and stories about Kobe and all that. So we'll talk to El Hombre about that and everything else going on. Mike Varell from the Seattle Times will join us on the program, as well as John Clayton at 4 o'clock, live from South Beach, John Clayton. So we'll get his perspective on what's happening out there and if the tides are turning. I'm surprised to hear so many people are favoring the Chiefs. Not that I don't think that's who I'm picking, that's who I want to win, but it feels like the 49ers should be the favorite, doesn't it?
That's what I think. I mean, I've been selling them since week 10.
Yeah,
I've been
on their bandwagon
for
a long time.
Yeah, and I just think they're so much better coached than most teams in the NFL. I mean, that's really what it's about. Obviously they've gotten the high draft choices, and that's what we kind of talked about yesterday. I heard, Stacy and Tom and Jake talking about that as well. Do you trade up? Jimmy brought that up. But that's kind of what they've done. That's how they've gotten Nick Bosa. I mean, they were 4-12 last year. I was looking. There's only been two other teams that have made the Super Bowl. One was the 88 after 4-12 season or worse, and one of them was Cincinnati, and the other one I think was the 99 Rams. So, I mean, going from 4-12 to, 13-3 and getting into the playoffs, I mean, and now in the Super Bowl, it's pretty amazing what they've done. But they've got, all those top-end guys. And they made some good moves, too, in free agency. I think getting D Ford and then also the Quan Alexander thing. I mean, everybody thought that they paid that guy too much. But I like their linebackers, and they've drafted well. That Fred Warner kid, second-round draft choice, just like Bobby Wagner. They're building the team that way. I think the one question mark on them is if Jimmy Garoppolo has to come back and win a game, can he do it? He was pretty clutch in that New Orleans game, but
yeah, he's shown those moments throughout a regular season. How does he respond to the spotlight and the magnitude of a game like this? Does it change the way he plays? Does he tighten up? I mean, I think and the same could be true for Mahomes. He hasn't played in a Super Bowl either. So you feel like he's got more experience under his belt, but this is a new experience for both of these guys. We'll see how they respond, but you just have more faith in Mahomes. He talent-wise, the guy is special. He's just a special athlete, and I think he's got to be the biggest reason why anybody's favoring the Chiefs over the 49ers in this, because of the quarterback comparison.
Yeah, I think that's – I mean, look, quarterbacks, whether you like it or not, and everybody says it's a quarterback league. I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm sort of on board with that, but the reason why they get paid so much is because they can bring a team from behind. And, I think Mahomes has that ability, but we'll see. We'll see about Jimmy Garoppolo. But they've run the ball so well and just played such good defense that, he's kind of like in the early stages of Russell. He's not a different kind of quarterback, but as far as, prove it type of guy, I mean, he still is, it's yet to be seen as to whether or not that is the guy that can lead them from behind. Remember, we used to talk about T-Jack all the time about that.
Yeah.
T-Jack was a 65% passer. He didn't throw a lot of interceptions. But, I mean, when it was time to engineer a comeback drive, he just couldn't do it.
He was 0-for in the fourth quarter here.
Yeah. He just couldn't do it. And there's a certain quality that you have to have. And we'll see if Jimmy Garoppolo has that or not.
Well, I was just reading something about Garoppolo on Twitter today from Paul Hembekadides or something like that on Twitter. I guess it doesn't really matter. And I'm just going to...
You didn't get the random Twitter guy's name right?
I guess it doesn't matter where it came from, because I believe everything I see on Twitter. And so it says about Jimmy Garoppolo, and that's the thing that's out there, game manager and all this stuff. And I remember thinking, well, okay, my own two eyes, I saw him against New Orleans and against Baltimore, and he seemed to do pretty well. But Paul Hembekidis, he backed it up with these numbers, 84 quarterback rating in fourth quarter and game within one possession, best in the NFL, Jimmy Garoppolo, 115.7 passer rating with team trailing, best in the NFL, 60% completion percentage on throws, 15-plus yards downfield, best in the NFL, and 154 passer rating outside the pocket, best in recorded history. So whatever you think about Garoppolo, and I know that we like to trash on him because we don't like the 49ers here in Seattle, but I think he's a capable quarterback and better than a game manager, and I know that Patrick Mahomes is in a different stratosphere, I suppose, but it's not like Garoppolo's that far behind him.
Yeah, he is.
Is he? Are you sure?
Yes.
Is that why you're taking Kansas City in the game?
Yes, it is. Because
we need to wager on that, Bob.
All right.
Okay.
I don't think they're close, to be honest. I mean, we can find stats to support whatever position we want to present. That's the beauty of stats.
You didn't like what I threw out
there.
No,
it's great. I don't think he stinks by any stretch. My only thing with Garoppolo was like, all right, well, let's pump the brakes a little bit and wait to see who this guy is. I mean, they gave him a contract that made him the highest paid athlete in the history of the NFL. Now, it lasted for about 5 minutes, but still, that amount of money, I'm going, oh, hang on. Everybody's like, well, he was undefeated at the end of the season. I'm like, they were a garbage team playing. It was a throwaway. It was the softest landing you could possibly have as a starter when he came over to the 49ers. Then he blows out the knee. Now he's come back, and I think he's a good quarterback, and he may end up being great. My whole thing was like, let's just slow down on Garoppolo's the God conversation that was going on.
Well, and that was going on even before this season.
Yeah, that was my point is, okay, he's got the contract. And listen, they've won a ton of games, and he's certainly been a part of that. I don't think he's been the main part of it, but he's shown that he's capable. I think the game manager thing comes obviously from a game you win when you throw the ball eight times. You threw the ball eight times. He was, you could look at it and go, well, they don't even really need him. They just need somebody to hand the ball off, which is not true. You need him. He needs to be good, and he completed six of those eight passes for 77 yards. Yeah. But I think it's easy to look at that game and be prisoner of the moment and go, he's a non-factor. He's a game manager. They don't ask him to do anything. Well, in that particular game, they didn't ask him to do much. He didn't need to. But they have asked him to do more, and he's been able to do it. I just don't think he's nearly as good as Mahomes.
Well, and I think the other thing, too, is, you got to look at some of the throws that he's making. I mean, the one to Kittle wasn't a very long pass, right? I mean,
it turned into a 50-yarder, but it was about a 5-yarder.
Because Kittle was just fighting his tail off the whole way. And then I remember looking at I think he had a net of 10 yards. The ball was in the air, his first three throws against Green Bay. And then they went down and ran that trap play and scored a touchdown. But he threw three passes, which was almost half of what the entire day was. And they, a couple of them were behind the line of scrimmage. And then one of them was, like 16, 17 yards downfield, and the guy ran for 40. So, yeah, look, I'm not trashing on the guy. I think he's done a great job. And I think he's perfect for their system right now. But when you get in a game like this, if it's going to be a shootout, and the other thing that might be sort of the sleeper in this is Kansas City's defense.
Yeah, they're not getting a ton of credit.
Yeah, people are still talking about Kansas City last year. They've really upgraded though.
Yeah, I mean they're
especially toward the second half of the season.
They're giving up 19 points a game, in the regular season anyway. And I know that there's been lots of points scored in the other games in the playoffs, but man, you mentioned the last five. I think they were giving up 10 points a game. And I know Frank Clark is on that defense, and is Frank referring to himself in the third person now?
I read a quote. I'm not sure if it's in one. We'll play one of these sound bites. I can't take that from anybody. Actors, musicians, athletes. It makes me nuts.
Is that when you've lost touch with reality?
I don't understand the mindset. I don't know how that makes sense to say, you know what Bob thinks. It's so awkward and ridiculous sounding. Or, hey, you know what Bob Stelton thinks about this? It's like, ugh. I just get the chills when people do that, and it just comes out so naturally.
Well, you know what Dave thinks? Dave thinks you should play the clip.
Bob, you're making Bob uncomfortable. let's see. I'm not sure which clip it is. We got if that's the one.
Bob told me that he heard that right before the show, so I do not have that clip. I can try to find it. But we just had the former Seahawks players talking about their past relationship with the Seahawks is what I had had in there.
Yeah, maybe we'll get that later. I read him referring third person.
Dave would like to hear it later.
Dave who does that? Who does that with a straight face? Meanwhile, she just alluded to former Seahawks out there speaking. First of all, I'm not sure who this reporter is speaking to Richard Sherman, but somebody's out there basically begging him to come back. And here's Richard Sherman sort of playing along like it's a fractured relationship, a love that's now been lost.
I really appreciate that, and I'm so thankful for the time we had. You know, it was such an incredible relationship. It had its ups and it's had its downs. And right now, you know, the relationship I'm in, I'm so happy, and I'm so thankful for the people I have with me. And they came to me at a time when I was really down and out. And they didn't give up on me. And you know, there's something about that you can just appreciate genuinely. And so, you know, I just try to focus on them right now. And I don't have time to think about other relationships. And I'll still love them too, you know. But it's just a hurt. And the scar is still there. And the love I have right now, I'm really focused on the present. And that's all my attention can take right now.
So the reporter presented their question like they were, you know, a long-lost love, like they broke up.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Like, so please come back.
He was kind of fun in the round.
Yeah, he was playing along with that theme.
Okay.
Like, you know.
What relationship with the reporter?
Well, he was saying on behalf of Seattle.
Oh, for Seattle.
But,
okay, gotcha.
But speaking like it was a, you know, like a former lover, a former girlfriend, what happened.
Well, that surprises me that he even joked around that much about it, because I feel like he's just cut ties and, you know. I think this is what happens. After 5 years, after you're retired, you know, I remember Brett Favre when he left and went to Minnesota, bring this up all the time. I know he went to the Jets too, but everybody in Green Bay was hanging him in effigy, and, you know, they just were burning their Favre jerseys. And, you know, 5 years later, he's out there with Bart Starr out on the field at halftime, getting, you know, recognize his number in the Ring of Fame or whatever. So that's going to happen at some point, but I have not heard any of that from him where, you know, he even wants to joke about what happened in Seattle. It seems like everything else has just been kind of vicious about the Seahawks and kind of either dogging Russell or Pete Carroll or
and it has, you're whatever. Right. I think it was the way he was approached. Like, it was a big joke and please come back. I'm sorry I hurt you. We're, you know, speaking on behalf of Seattle.
Yeah, but I mean, he played along with it.
Yeah.
And so I guess it just makes me think, well, maybe he'll, you know, maybe he really will soften up someday and come back to Seattle and be a hero.
Here's Frank Clark, another former Seahawk, talking about the Seahawks.
Oh, yes, for sure. You talking about Sherm? And just, yeah, and I feel like it's not even, I wouldn't give all the credit to Sherm, but I give a lot of the credit to just that whole defense that I came in. You got to know, man, I came into a great place, man, honestly, coming to the Seahawks, you know, and it's just, you know, thanks to Pete Carroll and, you know, the guys over there who brought me in, but, man, that defense.
Dave misses Frank. Really misses Frank. Frank,
this makes Bob really uncomfortable.
A fantastic, fantastic defensive player. But I mean, I don't know. I mean,
that's a different take, though, right?
You wouldn't
right?
have Clowney, though.
Yeah, that's right. You wouldn't have had Clowney, and I don't know. Maybe Frank is going to be that kind of player at some point. I'm not sure if he is, but I liked Frank. I really did. When we would have him on Thursday nights on that, you know, at the Hawks Live show, you know, he would turn and talk to the people and make eye contact with them, and you know, and I know he's had some ups and downs, but then do you remember the play, the running play where he hurtled over a pulling guard against Indianapolis? I just never seen anything like that. And you know, he was so quick, he was like a cat when he came down, he pounced on the guy. It was like, man, it was just he was just incredibly, he's one of those quick twitch guys that you need opposite of Clowney. You need another guy like that. And you're right, Jim. You wouldn't have had JD here, so
you wouldn't have had the draft picks that you had. I mean,
but you got 11 instead of 4,
and you would have been paying him that contract, which feels exorbitant.
Yeah, right. And Dave, why do you think they were reluctant to do that? I mean, Kansas City saw fit to going 5 years, $105 million, $63 million guaranteed. What do you think the issues were with the Seahawks?
I don't know. I wonder if they thought that it might be that paying him that much money might alter him or turn him into, because I mean, he's had kind of a rough past. Maybe that could have been it. But I think the opportunity to get younger and to trade for picks and all of that. I think that was part of it too. I feel like they were a little bit on the edge of whether or not they're going to sign him, and then decided to go that way if they knew they could get that much out of him, you know. And so we'll see how this 2019 draft turns out. I know that went ahead and ranked them, but Dave doesn't have a password for it.
No, I know.
So I
you got to stop
getting get in through the paywall there.
Yeah, Dave doesn't want to pay the $300.
Dave, please.
To go.
You're killing me.
So anyway, yeah, we'll see how this 2019 draft turns out. And I think, you know, they got really fired up about that 18 draft too. And you know that look, that's been awesome. Draft. No matter what you think about, and I know people are criticizing Trey Flowers, but I mean, Disley unfortunately gotten hurt, but I mean, pretty much everybody out of that draft has turned into a really good player. And you know, and Rasheem Green being one of those guys, and wrote an article that'll be up, I think, tomorrow on 710sports.com.
Where?
710sports.com. And Dave wrote an article called Sackstravaganza, Bob.
Doesn't that feel weird?
Is it part four?
No, I feel perfectly comfortable. I'm really
totally
liking
natural.
This. I like this.
Do you cover all the parts?
Only a Sackstravaganza 1, Jim.
Okay, all right. So we'll stay tuned for the sequel next
week.
Oh,
I know. You'll be waiting on the edge of your seat.
I will be.
Right. Yeah, but you know, compared Rasheem Green pretty closely to Jeff Boogie Bryant. Remember Big Boogie?
Yeah.
Yeah, and number 77, he spent his whole career here in Seattle, 12 years, missed 8 games in his 12 years, has ended up with 63 sacks. He's third on the list all time. That's Rasheem Green to me. I mean, he only got one last year as a rookie, but Jeff at one point had 12 and a half sacks, and he didn't make the Pro Bowl in 1984, which is a crime. But, you know, he averaged about 5 sacks a year. But he was just a solid player. So, I mean, you've got Rasheem Green. You know, you've got some good pieces. But I still think if you get Clowney and you get one more guy coming off the edge, I don't know why I like Yannick Ngakoue so much. I guess just
because he's 24 and he's got some nice numbers there.
Yeah. Watching him play.
I see why you like him.
The first game I ever did was, you know, filling in on the broadcast was down in Jacksonville. And I just remember watching that guy just thinking he looked like a cat out on the field. Man.
How different. Or how similar is their defense to what they run here? Do you know well enough from memory?
No, not enough to speak, you know, technically on it. But, you know, he's a defensive end in a 4-3 that, you know, coming off the edge. And that's kind of what, you know, because if you're in a 3-4, then you're like an outside linebacker. And, you know, you're dropping sometimes into coverage. They dropped Clowney a fair amount last year, actually. And I know Groz was complaining about how in one of those plays that was crucial, they weren't rushing him, which I tend to agree with him. But, yeah, I mean, I think he more classically fits into this type of defense.
Yeah, because we've seen, and maybe it doesn't apply to a defensive end who's playing in a 4-3 and comes to another 4-3.
Yeah.
We've seen cornerbacks that succeeded and had a lot of success in this system here in Seattle and then go off elsewhere, and they weren't even close to the same player.
Right.
So I'm just curious defensively if we're looking at guys who could be a product of their system versus this is just who they are no matter what team they're plugged into. You know, that's why I'm asking about him and his success there.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that because Sherm and Earl Thomas, trying to think of anybody else, are the two guys that have gone and had success somewhere else after leaving here. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah,
yeah, I mean, Maxwell didn't. Thurman didn't. Browner was, I mean, he became a role player for the Patriots.
Yeah. Well, and those are defensive backs, and now we're talking about a corner, certainly in Richard Sherman. But, you know, he can't run anymore. But also you could say that's fairly similar defense down there because Sala kind of runs the same sort of principles as Pete Carroll does. At least that's what Dave sees when he watches the same.
All right, let's take two. Take two.
Take two. The NBA has postponed tonight's Lakers-Clippers game. They released a statement saying the decision was made out of respect for the Lakers organization, which is deeply grieving the tragic loss of Lakers legend Kobe Bryant, his daughter Gianna, and 7 other people from a helicopter crash on Saturday.
Well, I think that's a good call. A lot of people thought the NBA shouldn't have played games on Sunday. There are a lot of nice tributes out there, but I think it's a little too soon. Lakers, Clippers.
I mean, this is closer to home. This is the Lakers. Yeah. This one makes sense. Around the league, I was torn. I would get it if they said, hey, we're not playing today. I would understand. I wouldn't throw a big fit about it. But then people brought up, hey, you know what? A lot of these teams aren't directly connected to him. You got a lot of people that work within the stadium, concessions, and blah, blah, blah. You're taking away a day from them. season ticket holders, what have you. I mean, I understood both sides of it. I hate to ride the fence on anything, but that one I kind of understood both sides.
Well, and I think especially plan the day of, because it was just too soon to plan for all of those things. At least you give somebody a day or two.
Right. People could be traveling from far away to get to certain games that were scheduled yesterday or the day that it happened. And, you know, last minute you're going to go, sorry, doors are closed. I mean, I don't think logistically that was probably possible.
Yeah, you know, this probably doesn't have a whole lot of meaning, but I was looking at some of the ticket sites like Vivid Seats and SeatGeek, you know, wondering how much tickets were going for that game, because I knew a lot
of people. This Laker one?
Yeah, before it was postponed, and tickets were going for $1,200 and up. Wow. $1,200 in the upper deck, and then $2,500, $3,000 tickets that were not even mid-court or not even courtside.
Jeez.
And I'm just, you know, I was just thinking about, boy, if, you know, some people who bought those tickets, I don't know if they have any recourse on that, but it's a small thing, but I think the NBA made the right move, though, not playing that game tonight.
UW freshman forward Jaden McDaniels was benched in Saturday's disappointing loss to Colorado. Mike Hopkins says he has not committed to starting McDaniels this week, with the Huskies facing Arizona Thursday night. We'll be talking with Coach tomorrow.
Yeah, he'll be with us at, what, 2:45 tomorrow?
Well, we're going to record before the show, and then.
Yeah, so we'll tape it at 2:45, but we'll play it during the show. Yeah, what are his options, though? I mean, do you feel like this is a deep team? Do you feel like, well, we got plenty of options if he's not the starter? They're struggling right now. This is where you find out how good a coach is, in my opinion. Everybody loves Hop. You love him, Jim. Everybody feels like he's a really good coach. When things are rolling, it's easier to be on the bandwagon, say this guy's great and that kid plays great and this kid's a heady player and, boy, they're mature. I think you see what guys are made of. You see what coaches are made of, and you see what players are made of more specifically. Is he going to be able to rally kids? Kids have a harder time, you know, dealing with struggles and dealing with it, with the setbacks this team has had. So I think we're going to get a really clear look at what kind of a leader he is here.
Yeah, well, he's fed up with McDaniels, it appears. I mean, I'm looking at McDaniels' numbers, and I haven't been watching Husky basketball all year, but I saw the game Saturday and where he was pulled and only played 2 minutes in the second half. McDaniels averaging 12.6 points and 6.1 rebounds, but he's also leading the team in turnovers 3.3 a game. And I love what Hopkins had to say. It's like, if you're not going to play as part of this team, then you're not going to play at all. So I love that he just, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're one and done. You're going to play the game the way I want it played, or you're not going to play at all. And that's what it appears is going on with McDaniels right now. And we'll see how it turns out. We can ask him about it tomorrow.
Well, I just think it's a matter of time before he gets it turned around. And, you know, Dave thinks that Hop is way too good of a coach.
He's really,
and they
committed.
Have too much talent just for this segment, Bob. By the way, John, our buddy John, said, how's it feel? It's glorious. Referring to myself in the third person.
It's
love
not.
It. No. I really love
it's
it,
It's uncomfortable. Tell the truth. It's weird. It's really weird.
It's fantastic. I feel so powerful now. I really do.
So awkward.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll talk to Hop tomorrow.
Yeah.
But, you know, also playing in a zone defense, I mean, you got to play together. I mean, man-to-man's one thing, but that's the whole principle. And if you're not playing together, you know, then that just doesn't work. So, yeah, I mean, it just seems like it took him a little while to sort of weed out, you know, who's playing well, who's not. And, you know, hopefully McDaniels turns it around and we'll see more of him.
All right, coming up, Mike Varela of the Seattle Times is going to join us, talk about Stanford transfer KJ Costello, their quarterback visiting UW. He's in the transfer portal, so what's going to happen with that? We'll find out next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at 4 o'clock, the professor, John Clayton, will join us on the program live from Miami, side of the Super Bowl. But right now we're talking Husky football because there's a little bit of news out there. KJ Costello, formerly of Stanford now, quarterback, is in the transfer portal. He's making a visit to the University of Washington, and here to discuss it from the Seattle Times is Mike Varela joining us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Mike, how are you, man?
Doing well. How are you guys?
Doing good. Thanks for taking a few minutes with us. And how excited should people be? How big a news is this in your mind?
Excited is an interesting word. I think there's kind of a divide for UW fans right now because, you know, they just went through the Jacob Eason stuff, who was a guy who came in and transferred. So the question is, do you want a guy like KJ Costello to come in? And, you know, he has certainly the potential to be very good and has put up some good numbers at Stanford. Or do you want to try to grow the guys that you have when you have 3-4-star quarterbacks on your roster? So, you know, it's not a done deal. He's visiting. You know, there's obviously interest there. It's, you know, it's certainly there's a likelihood, and I'm sure that UW is one of his finalists. And but it's a question at the end of the day, if you want to go with the experienced guy like Washington State has a couple years in a row and go with a grad transfer, or if you want to try to grow the guys you have. So there's kind of more of a philosophical dilemma at the heart of this thing.
Mike, coming from somebody that doesn't know a whole lot about this portal, first of all, what percentage, is it pretty much all quarterbacks, or what kind of players, what percentage are quarterbacks that are entering the portal?
I mean, it's all different kinds of positions, but certainly quarterbacks have gotten the most play, and quarterbacks have really manipulated it the most, I would say, where there's more of a sense of quarterbacks that, you know, if I'm the backup and I don't see a chance to play in the next year or two, I'm going to try to get somewhere else. You can kind of finagle things now to try to request immediate eligibility. So there's more of a sense of free agency with quarterbacks specifically, where guys are hopping from one school to the next and trying to find the right opportunity. Certainly other positions are transferring as well. But when it comes to this just rampant move of guys from one team to the next, the quarterback position has really changed the game in that way.
Boy, Mike, I'm really torn on it because Gardner Minshew is, exhibit A of how it can work out so well. But I'm always thinking about the kids who were recruited as freshmen and spending their time there, working their way up, and then all of a sudden you bring a kid in, like let's say Costello comes in for the Huskies, and if you're Jacob Sermon, Dylan Morris, and Ethan Garbers, maybe you're going, well, you know, what's the deal here? And yet if you're a fan, you want the best quarterback out there. So yeah, when you talk about all these different things to consider, I'm not sure how Washington and Jimmy Lake are going to end up with this, but it's a lot to think about.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. If you're Jimmy Lake, you know, you're coming in. This is your opportunity. You've been waiting your whole life to get this chance as a first-time head coach, and you want to win. And he's seen KJ Costello twice play against UW and play pretty well at times. So this is an established entity. But like you said, you know, Jacob Sermon is a guy who's a redshirt sophomore now, who's been there for 3 years, and he went into the transfer portal last offseason and then ended up staying and deciding, you know, not to transfer out. But, you know, who's to say if KJ Costello comes that he doesn't, you know, rethink that and then go try to find, you know, a better opportunity. I think all of these guys, they're under no obligation to stay. Everyone has to do what's best for themselves. You only have so much eligibility. So that's certainly a concern when you have 3-4-star guys, albeit that have not played, you know, at all, and Jacob Sermon, Dylan Morris, Ethan Garbers, but highly touted guys. And are those guys going to be developed if a KJ Costello comes in? That's really the question, and that's what I think everyone has to kind of deal with.
Well, you just touched on what I wanted to ask you, Mike, and that is, you know, they're highly rated, but we haven't seen them play. So I'm curious how much of a gap you think there is between that group of players and KJ Costello. Does he come in and automatically he's decidedly better, more talented? It's going to be an obvious move. He's going to be the starter? Or how would you see that playing out?
From what I've seen just being around the program, I think Costello would be, you know, to me, the heavy favorite to be the starter. This is a guy who's a two-time captain at Stanford. He's a two-year starter there, who was all Pac-12 second team in 2018. He dealt with injury issues last year, only played in 5 games. But he's an established entity. And not just that, he's an established entity at a school that runs a pro-style system that may be, you know, pretty similar to what UW ends up running this season. So there's a lot to like from that perspective. But like you said, you know, all three of the guys they brought in are 4-star kids. And, you know, there's always the opportunity to find someone who's a breakout player. Now, we haven't seen that. I mean, Jacob Sermon has thrown 3 passes in his career. The rest of them haven't played yet. So, you know, even if Costello comes in, I expect that there would be a legitimate competition. But at the end of the day, I would be surprised if anyone but Costello is not the starter should he end up transferring to UW.
Hey, Mike, just as a fan, as a college football fan, how do you like this rule? Because I've been sort of, you know, told, hey, it gives the players a little bit more power, just because, you know, there are some programs that will cut guys year to year, and, you know, they're only offering a scholarship. It's not like a four-year commitment, and it gives these guys some player, some power. But how do you feel about it? How do you think it's treating the game, college football?
Well, that's, I mean, we're kind of in this divide, and that's, you know, before Chris Peterson, you know, resigned, I mean, that was an ongoing conversation. It was this idea of guys just, if it's hard, if they're not starting, you know, of just leaving for greener pastures. But on the other side, I mean, if you're a player, you, like I said, you only have so much eligibility. You have one chance to make an impact and to be able to pursue your lifelong dreams, and you should, you know, from that perspective, you should want to be able to maximize that opportunity. So I get both sides of it. But you know, I think where the issue is with the NCAA, when these kids are requesting, you know, immediate eligibility, trying to play right away, there isn't a lot of consistency in the ruling in terms of who is allowed to play right away, who isn't, whose cases are seen as egregious or justifiable. There just isn't a, you know, consistency in the way these things are treated, and that's the big issue. But certainly the game is changing, and it's trending much more towards free agency with quarterbacks specifically, and everyone's kind of trying to figure out how to deal with that.
Hey, Mike, the Huskies made a hire of their new offensive coordinator, John Donovan, and I saw some things about him, and it just seems like it's a mixed bag there. Some people are excited about it, others aren't. Where do you stand on that, and how do you think Donovan's going to be there at Washington?
Well, where I stand on it is that I have no idea what's going to happen. I mean, and I think anyone who says that they do is lying, because this is a guy who's been with the Jacksonville Jaguars as an assistant coach for the last 4 years, kind of behind the scenes. And when he was with Penn State before that as the offensive coordinator, it did not go well. But with that being said, I mean, he was dealing with heavy, heavy sanctions in terms of recruiting while he was there, which makes it hard to do just about anything. So really, it's hard to know, you know, what you're getting in this guy. You know, Jimmy Lake has said this is going to be a guy who is a grinder, who is a, you know, blue-collar guy, like the right kind of work ethic, who is going to bring energy, is going to bring some NFL philosophy, that then we have this pro-style, smash-you-in-the-mouth offense. You know, and all that sounds great, but until we see what that looks like, and until we see how he recruits as well, there's just a lot of questions. So, yeah, I'm not saying it's a bad hire or a good hire. I just think no one knows right now what it's going to end up looking like, and we're going to find out an awful lot in the next year or two.
Okay, last thing, Mike. Is Jimmy Lake aware that there's a new coach at Washington State and it's not going to be so easy to win the Apple Cup anymore?
I know that he knows there's been a new hire, but I'm not sure anyone knows if it's going to be not so easy. I guess we'll have to find out, huh?
Hey, Mike. My teammates are shaking their heads at Mike. They wanted to go to break, but I wanted to work that question in because I'm sick of losing the damn Apple Cup.
He's got to squeeze in a Cougs angle somewhere, Mike. It's just how it goes with him. Hey, we appreciate you taking a few minutes with us, so thank you so much.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
There you go, Mike. Mike Varela, the Seattle Times, spending a few moments with us. Coming up, need a reason to care more about this Super Bowl? Jim Moore, by God, has got some prop bets, and we'll see if any of them have a cougar angle on them. Let's see if that's going to be the case, huh? That's next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
John Clayton will join us at the top of the hour, live from the site of the Super Bowl out there in South Beach, Miami. But as we head into Super Bowl week, we're in Super Bowl week, we get these emails from different betting outlets and all these different prop bets. And every year that list gets longer and longer and longer. And I know you eat this stuff up.
And
you
some of us delete those emails and others make it into a segment.
That's exactly right. Jim Moore, ladies and gentlemen.
Isn't this stuff kind of fun, though?
Some of them I look at it and just go, how did you come up with that, and how much action are you getting on that? How many people are saying, yep, I want to bet on Adam Levine's halftime show. Will he be shirtless or wear a leather jacket? Or I mean, just the most random minutia bets you could think of.
Well, yeah, and there's talking about the halftime show with Jennifer Lopez is going to be there, right? And who's the other?
Shakira,
yeah.
Will there be a bet on whether they're singing
whether
live or lip syncing?
Don't Lie or, you know, something like that.
How about those are things that can be manipulated. That's why I would think that you could only put so much, like the color of the Gatorade bath.
Yeah.
That's one every year, and that can be manipulated, right?
Probably, yeah, but I think there's a max you can put down, maybe 500 or something like that, to guard against that. But, yeah, it's. I just think it's – so the game itself, Kansas City's favored by 1.5, and the over-under is 54.5. So, I mean, there's those typical – but the prop bets just kind of add to it. And I read the other day that the prop bet that's bet on the most is the coin flip. Which I found really surprising because, yeah. I mean, come on, the coin flip, and more people are betting on heads than tails.
Of all prop bets, that's...
Of all prop bets, people are betting on the coin flip.
Wow. That's ridiculously simple and stupid.
Maybe that's why you feel like I got a great chance of winning this.
Dave can't believe this.
but Dave, don't you feel like heads is going to come up more often than tails? Like,
no.
If somebody calls tails, don't you sit there and go, why didn't you call heads?
Russell calls tails every time.
Does he call tails every time?
Yeah, tails never fails.
No, I know it should be 50-50, but...
No, it's not that it should be, Jim. It will be.
Well, I know, but it's like at the craps table. Yeah. A 7 should be rolled more than other numbers, but sometimes that's not the case. A 7 is usually rolled when you have the most money out there on the table.
What about roulette?
And then they bring out that rake. Have you ever seen that,
Yeah,
Dave?
The rake. Yeah, I have
rake,
seen that.
And then all the chips go in their direction.
What about roulette? Does one color win more than the other?
No, because you have, because you have two green numbers, too.
Have an equal number of black and red?
Yes, you do.
So it should be 50-50, then.
Well, it should be, but you got the green numbers.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
I always bet on the green numbers, by the way, if I'm ever going to play roulette.
Really?
Yeah.
Because those are the slimmest odds.
No, because when the ball's going around, you can have a better idea of where the 0 and 00 are because they're green.
But there's only two of those, you're saying.
It heightens the gambling buzz.
Yeah, but the odds are much longer that it's going to land on green versus black or red.
36-1 or
something. Is that the dumbest way to lose your money ever? Roulette?
I'm guessing Jim's found dumber ways.
Just the ball drops down and you're like you knew it was going to be there. I put it on 18 black or whatever.
Or how about Keno?
I don't know how to play.
Keno's just as bad. That's where there's like 60 numbers, and you pick different numbers and stuff. Yeah.
All right, give us some props.
Okay, will they show the Golden Gate Bridge during the game? because the 49ers are there. I know it's in Miami, but 2-1, yes, and no is 1-3. So no is a big favorite there.
I'd go with no.
Yeah, me too. Why would they show the Golden Gate Bridge?
Yeah, they might because the Niners are there. They might show a landmark from San Francisco.
How about a streetcar?
Kansas City, maybe they'd show some fountains.
They don't even play in San Francisco.
Barbecue.
Yeah, barbecue places. Yeah. So there's that. Total times Mike Shanahan has shown during the game. The over-under is 1.5.
I'd take the over on
that. I would take the over on that, too. That's the favorite, 2-3.
So there was a lot in the NFC Championship game, wasn't there?
Well, yeah, anytime there's a questionable call, is he going to throw a flag or he calls a timeout, the camera goes to him. I mean, 1.5? That seems like, would that be a sucker bet? Am I feeling like that's a no-brainer and maybe it's a lot closer?
You bet 30 to win 20 on that, so it's a favorite. But, yeah, I think that'd be a good bet, Bob. I think you should partake of that. How about this one? 10,000-1 odds. You ready for this?
10,000-1.
10,000-1 that Kansas City scores 4 points.
That they score two safeties in the game?
4 points total. 10,000-1. I saw William Hill or something like that. Sportsbook has that.
So somebody will go bet $1 on that?
Yeah.
But it was just
two safeties.
It seems virtually impossible.
Why not go $5?
Yeah, I guess.
You don't like that one at all?
No.
How about will MC Hammer say Hammer Time in the Cheetos commercial? That's kind of a pick'em.
Why wouldn't he? I forgot about the commercials, man. Every year.
I didn't know he had a commercial coming out.
I didn't either. Will Betty White be in the Snickers commercial?
Oh, yeah.
No is a slight favorite over yes. She just turned 98 or something like that I saw the other day.
She really?
Yeah. She had her birthday.
Wow.
How about this one's always, every year we get this one. Will Demi Lovato omit a word from the national anthem? Yes is a 9-1. I mean, you can...
I'll say no.
You can bet $10 and get $90 back on that.
What are we saying? Is she's going to make a mistake?
Just omit a word. It could be... You do hear that a lot. It's subtle, but often they'll skip over a word.
I saved a girl in Denver one time. She was out practicing, and I was out stretching before, and she was doing the warm-up. She called it perilous flight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I went and said, I told whoever was running, I was like, just so you know, she said flight. It's fight. And I wasn't being a jerk about it. I just wanted to save her.
No,
and,
that's good.
And then we went out and we stood there, national anthem. She got it right. I felt good.
Did you say, you're welcome?
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah, but we all sit here and think that we know all the words to the national anthem. I remember when I was at the PI, I wrote a column about baseball players and whether they knew the words to the national anthem. They hear it 162 times a year. I would not bet on myself, sober or drunk, on whether... on whether I could get through the national anthem and know every word.
I like the drunks part of the equation.
I don't think I could do it.
You went through the locker room and asked guys?
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Because, 162 times. And how many got it right?
I mean, you think you could get through the first part, Dave? Oh, say, can you see? And then can you pick it up from there?
By the dawn's early light. What so proudly we hailed.
In the twilight's last gleaming.
Whose broad stripes and bright stars?
Through the perilous flight.
I think under pressure, though, it would be very easy to forget or screw up the verses. You hear people put the, verse that's at the end, at the beginning. The nerves, I think, get to you. I think they probably know the song.
If I was singing at T-Mobile Park and trying to do it, I'd be looking up at the scoreboard.
But if you're just alone in your house, you'd probably remember them. Sober.
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay. Sober Jim would.
All right, last one. Will Alex Rodriguez be shown during the halftime show when Jennifer Lopez is out there doing her thing?
No.
Hmm.
No? Well, no's the favorite, but...
J-Lo doesn't need A-Rod.
I don't think they cut away generally during the halftime show unless they're showing the crowd around. I don't recall them cutting away for reaction from people in stands. Like, you see the crowd that are props that they bring right up to the front of the stage. Generally, I don't think they cut away from the halftime show.
Do you remember the? I don't remember which Super Bowl it was, but the Janet Jackson one was.
I was there.
You were at the Super Bowl,
sitting right next to Ice Cube.
No way.
Yeah, and nobody in the stadium had any idea that it had happened.
Oh, okay.
And then all of a sudden they started bringing out paper statements from CBS or Fox, whoever was carrying the game that year, like apologizing. We're getting passing them down the row, and we're all reading it, going, "The hell are they talking about? Wardrobe malfunction."
Yeah.
Nobody had any idea.
I just remember Chris Rock's joke about how it was a 40-year-old breast.
Yeah.
He says, the 40-year-old breast is going, close the door, close the door.
Yeah, it was not a big deal there. It really wasn't. Nobody knew what had happened.
I was like, what, did I really just see that?
Yeah. I didn't know. I certainly went back and watched, though. All right, coming up, John Clayton is live from Radio Row in Miami. We'll get to the bottom of the conflicting Philip Rivers news that's been out there all day. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.